Here we go, ready for another episode of Football 52. This has become my favorite part of the week. I talk a lot on the radio, but man, this is one of my favorite pieces of radio, podcast, media that I've ever done. Episode 17, Football 52, head coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, good to have you back in the old studio, man. We're going to find out if you got rusty after 1 week.
I'm sure I did. Great to be here. It's hard to follow up with James Pazak.
He was great.
He's a real ball of energy. And I listened back to the episode, and it sounded like he was trying to button it up and be professional. And you know, he actually said it on the episode. You know, the thing I loved about James as a player, and the thing that I think he really brings to our team is just energy, kind of just this passion that's unchained. And, you know, I think he, you know, probably wanted to be as professional as possible and protect some of his words, being that it's being recorded for anyone to hear. But I think you could still get a sense of the difference between he and I. But when he's in front of our team and when he's talking to our players, there's an energy that they can feel and they feed off of. He's our battery. He charges everybody up. If you come into contact with Pazak, he's going to give you a charge.
Oh, I felt it too. And one of the things, so we've had Coach Pazak, and then we had Coach Aaron Fernandez on, you know, a few months ago. And what the thing I've noticed, that's with two of your assistants, Coach, is, and this is a cool thing. I mean, they do light up when you start asking them, not just about football or the team or the upcoming season. Talk to them a little bit about the history between them and, or, you know, you and your assistants. And they do light up and they get into it and they, oh man, we could go back. We could talk for a really long time. And that again speaks to that connection that you build up with these guys over the years. And you're not sure when that connection is going to, for lack of a better term, pay off. But here you go. It all comes, sometimes it does seem to come full circle. And you hear that talking to these assistant coaches.
It's so important to me to have coaches on the staff that we've been through the battles together. You know, coaching football is not an immediate meritocracy. You don't get, you know, in my experience, it's not like you have a great week of practice or a great recruiting class and then there's this immediate success that's guaranteed.
Sure.
I've been on staffs or coached where we had, you know, a pretty poor game plan, a pretty poor maybe overall motivational philosophy for the seasons, and still had great seasons. And then I've been on other staffs where we just didn't match up, and we were doing everything. You know, in hindsight, I feel like we were really doing everything right and didn't win. And you know, I think over the long term, there is certainly a connection between doing things right, treating people right, being knowledgeable about the game, and bringing a best effort, a best practices approach to coaching football. But the point I'm making is that when the losses are stacking up, you really need a group of guys that are unwavering in their commitment to doing it the way that we've set it up. And those guys that I've had success with before, we've been through those ups and downs, and I call them false floors sometimes, where there's some downs and then a breakthrough, and you feel like, okay, we've arrived. Now we're at the top part of the conference, and then all of a sudden somebody from the bottom of the conference comes and beats you, you know, and that's what I call a false floor. It's a false level of confidence amongst the team, maybe even the coaches and players. And so to have these guys that have been through it and seen it, they're not, I want to say the easy way to say it is they're loyal to me. They're loyal to the way that we do things. The way that I do things, sure, but the way that we do things, because they've experienced it, lived it, and made me successful.
Well, and again, that's one of the things I picked up on was, at the end of the day, a football staff, a Division I football team, you got a lot of dudes that know a lot about football. You know, you guys could all probably write some kind of book or memoir about football. And then that's getting all these guys to kind of come together, not to say they're going along with 100% every single thing, but they work it together where it is a team and it is overall unified philosophy. And it sounds all well and good when you say it out loud, but that, Coach, I think that has got to be, you talk about motivating your players and getting them up ready to go and all that, but these coaches are wanting to prove themselves too, and they're wanting to stand out, they're wanting to separate, and part of that is, hey, we got to find success. So making sure you get all these coaches on the same page that, are coming at this, you know, with a similar upbringing, that's got to be not necessarily difficult, but certainly a journey.
It absolutely is. And there's so much on the line for every coach. And you mentioned it when you said, you know, these guys have got to have success for their careers. Maybe mm-hmm. they want to be head coaches or take the next step to be a coordinator. And, you know, I think there's a part of many coaches that, you know, motivationally you want to coach at the highest competitive level you can, right? And there's several levels of, you know, you can go from FCS football to FBS or Power Four now, and then you've got the NFL or the other professional leagues. So there's certainly, a ladder to be climbed for most assistants, and it can be really difficult for a lot of assistant coaches to buy in through the hard times because they feel like it's a reflection of them. The first head coach I worked for, Mike Maynard, he said one time in a staff meeting, and we were going through a relatively rough patch for a team that won the championship every year. but it was a relatively rough patch. And he got really upset in a staff meeting and said, "This is my record." Mm. And I was so offended because I felt like it was my record too. You know, and it took me years to look back and realize, okay, no, on my resume now in 2024, it is not on my resume. It's not on a website. You can't find anywhere how many, you know, games that I won and lost as a defensive coordinator at the University of Redlands. That was Mike Maynard's win-loss record. And so there is some truth that rings to that where you, in the end, after all the discussion, when you get out on the practice field and on game day, do it the head coach's way. If the discussion hasn't led to some other way. And we're not doing everything my way. Like, these assistants are bringing a lot to the table. But if there's disagreement, in the end, you kind of go with the chain of command, sure. The hierarchy.
How strange is that sometimes? I just want to go back. You bring up the record. You know, that is the first thing that I do whenever we announce a new coach coming in, whether it's at Greeley or Fort Collins or Boulder or wherever, whether it's the Broncos, first thing you look at before you dive into anything else is, I don't care how much you know about a coach or don't know about a coach, that is the first thing. And that is ultimately what you, not as a man, because people that know you can judge you differently, but overall, your name's out there, and that record, numbers, is kind of what defines a career for you. That's not the case for me. You know, it might be awards, it might be success, it might be advertising dollars coming to the station. It's something you can't really just, it's not black or white. You know, you could say, yeah, he had some success, he had some failures, whatever, it was good, it was bad. With you, it's the record. Is that tough sometimes to take that, to look at that?
Well, there are definitely times where I've got to swallow some humility, swallow some pride and bring humility. Like, there are times where if you look at my overall record as a head coach, for example, which is primarily Southern Utah and then 1 year here at UNC.
Sure.
I mean, amongst people who know, there are no tougher jobs in the Big Sky than Southern Utah and Northern Colorado,
yeah.
Right? These are places that eat up coaches, spit them out, and fire them. We got Southern Utah rolling, and yet I left there, I think, one or two games under 500. And you know, we were playing two FBS money games a year at that time. We were playing generally, like we do here at UNC, 7 on the road, 5 at home. Now, let's look at that. Now, Coach Bobby Houck is a good friend at Montana, good friend of mine, known him for a long time, on and off the field, a lot of respect for him. But is his record at Montana equivalent in context to my record at Southern Utah and Northern Colorado, right? He's playing 7 or 8 games a year at home. They play no FBS guarantee games, no money games, right? Which are, you know, you don't say they're losses, but your chances of winning those FBS games, you can be a really good FCS football team, compete like crazy on those days and still come out with a loss, right? So, yes, there are times when I have to decide if somebody's kind of looking at my record or mentions it. Okay, do I explain all that context, or do I just say, you know, hey, it is what it is,
yeah,
and be proud of it? You know, I've won championships at places nobody else has won championships. And we've built a program where nobody else has built programs, and that's what we intend to do here at Northern Colorado. Now, you know, the 90s and, the you know, all of the Division II days for UNC were incredible, and so I don't want to in any way undercut that. But in terms of establishing a Division I track record of success here at UNC, what we're trying to accomplish is unprecedented.
Is it – so to answer that question too, when you do get people that bring up that record, do you go into it or do you just bite your tongue and say, yeah, that's the record? Does it depend on who you're talking to?
The only people that I could go into it with and give context would be like, you know, a close family member, my brother, you know, giving me crap about it. And then, you know, but anyone else is just going to hear that as, well, those are just excuses, right? Because if you're on the outside looking in, if it's not actually your business and you don't know what it's like to go up against somebody who's got three times the budget that you do and three times the stadium and the facilities and all that stuff, it can just sound like sour grapes or you're complaining. And I never want to. Yeah, I never want to be like that. In fact, we may have talked about this before, but my first meeting with the players at UNC, I pulled up a blank email and addressed it to Darren Dunn and Andy Feinstein and then said to the boys, hey, tell me why UNC hasn't been successful. Give me all the reasons. Let's talk about it. And anything, 90% of the things that the guys were bringing up, and I had to get started with some of it, right? Like, hey, it's a long walk from the locker room to the stadium, right?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, if you think that's the reason, yeah, okay, some guys are shaking their head. And then it starts coming out, right, because I gave the first one. And some of the guys are very aware of the challenges. And so after we got that whole list together, you know, I signed it, pushed send, and said, okay, that's the last time we talk about that stuff. And so I have to model that as well in my own life. If somebody at the golf course that's a casual UNC fan is going to give me some crap for losing, I'm not going to sit there and make excuses. I'm going to own it. And when we win, I'm going to own that really myself too. Those who were with us from the beginning, those who believed that we were going to get it done, they share it. I share it. And those who, you know, those who were out naysaying, they're, I guess at that point, they're just not talking as much.
That would be so – yeah, that would be just – well, again, that's the ultimate, right? Is if you know you do turn this thing around, and then it's hey, now look, you know, what we were able to accomplish here, and again, talking to assistant coaches and a couple of players so far, the belief sure seems like it's there. The messages we're getting sure seem like it's there. So that's exciting. But you are a stronger, better man than I am, because that would be difficult. Because I am aware of those challenges too. And we don't have to get into those because, like you said, we're not going to do that today. But it would be difficult for me not to say – because I've said it. When people talk about, well, why didn't it work? Why is it so difficult? Well, you got this, you got this, you got this. It's easy for me to say it because people don't look at it as, well, you're making an excuse. Maybe they do. I don't know. But that's tough, and I respect you for that. That's another reason, because that's one of the things I would want to pour in, you know, pour into the conversation of, hey, this is why – in some of those areas that we're struggling. But yeah, you don't do that.
Most years, 7-1 in the conference, in the Big Sky Conference, wins the championship or a share of the championship. And certainly, if I look at 7-1, is that a different? Does it look different to me to go 7-1 at UNC as the head coach than it does to my good friend and former teammates Kalani Sitake at BYU and Steve Sarkisian at Texas? Those are different programs with different expectations, and 7-1 in the conference is certainly not a bad year, but you know, eventually, like Mark Richt, or you know, 7-1 at Texas year after year in the conference, or you know, one or two losses a year in the conference, that's eventually going to get you let go. That's a national championship caliber program, and that's the test: is can you as a coach deliver that in 5 or 6 years?
It sports is such an interesting beast too. When you talk about it, I mean, we're you know on my show on a regular basis, we're just kind of we're still licking our wounds with the Nuggets and the Avalanche being eliminated in the second round, and you get people saying, well, is Michael Malone the guy for the job? Is Bednar? Malone won it last year. Bednar won it 2 years ago.
Sure.
And I'm thinking, you have a coach that's probably, again, they have good players. It's probably going to get you to the second round of the playoffs guaranteed every year. But a lot of fans would rather say, hey, let's fire him and try somebody else. Let's go with, you know, and I always say, like, the devil you know, man. I mean, if you have a coach that's getting you there, you just a few things have to bounce your way.
Yeah.
You know, you go to the fact that Kyle Shanahan with San Francisco is kind of in this weird hot seat. It's like the guy is almost guaranteed to get to the NFC Championship, maybe the Super Bowl, because they can't get over that one hump because a fumble happens, a bad play, whatever. It's amazing to me. Yet at different programs, different expectations. For the Broncos right now, you're going, just be neat to be a game out of the wild card spot, yeah. You know, at the end of the year. Sean Payton won't be on the hot seat.
Right. Well, as a fan, right, and I'm a fan too, you know, of different sports. I'm not so much a football fan. I don't have a lot of time to invest in football outside of UNC football. But as a fan, how many levers do you truly have to pull, right?
Like,
even if you're completely knowledgeable about the game and you're talking about, well, you know, the Broncos should run more intermediate routes or I'd like to see more pick and roll out of the Nuggets, like, the people around the water cooler are not going to be all that into your technical analysis of the game, right? But you say, hey, fire the coach, especially a coach that's been successful and is respected. Now people are like paying attention, right? And you're on the radio, so you have a few more levers. So people are listening and nobody can kind of interrupt you. You know, you have a format where you can explain your point. So you have a few more levers, but I think to the casual fan, your biggest lever is fire the coach.
Mm-hmm.
That gets
fire
reaction.
Him. Guy needs gone. Yeah. Like, you hear that all the time. And I will say, in my time, I really try to take care of that. You know, unless I really feel that, you know, this guy is maybe just bad for the program, not just bad with, you know, as far as the football terms, but maybe there's other things going on there. So I'm really I know the patience thing is a tough thing these days, but I've always been like, man, you got to let these guys see it through. I think one of the reasons the Nuggets are so successful is because they've really given Michael Malone the time there. They could have blew him out, you know, when they got eliminated by the Warriors in the first round or something, but it does take time. With any job you do, the more you do it, the more confident you get. The more your assistant coaches are with you, the more you got these freshmen that are growing up with you, and then they're now talking to their seniors, and then they're talking to the freshmen about their journey. It just makes everything more comfortable. So I do like that strategy. Obviously, there are limits, but it's amazing the culture we're in, because it's like you got 2 years, you got a year. It depends on where you are.
Well, what is the share? What is the Denver Nuggets' fair share for a competent coach and competent, you know, general management staff, ownership, you know, whatever you're going to consider, what is their share? What is their fair share of championships? How many teams in the NBA, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's 12 teams in the Big Sky Football Conference. And so if you have the average budget and the average facilities and the average resources, your share should be one out of every 12 years as a competent coach and program, you should win the championship, right?
Yeah.
And in the NBA, it's what, how many total teams? Is it 28
or 30 or 32?
Yeah, it's growing. Yeah. I'm not as much into the NBA. And I think the NFL now is up to 34.
I think so. Yeah.
So once every 34 years, but then you start saying, okay, well, but do the Niners have more advantages than the Cleveland Browns? And in football, there's a ton of parity. Baseball, not a lot of parity, right? Because baseball's still, you can just spend more money than the other guy and have a better opportunity to win. So I think for each sport and each team, the expected share of championships maybe changes. But it's kind of interesting to just look at the math and say, you know, I think the Nuggets are doing pretty good in terms of stealing their share or expanding their share of championships.
It's amazing how expectations just change depending on even what you do. You know, if your first year, I think of up north in Fort Collins with Mike Bobo. I think his first year, they went 7-6 after Jim McElwain left to go to Florida. And suddenly it was like, whoa, first year, McElwain won 3 games his first year with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the next year he went 7-6 again because they won their bowl game. And it was, oh, Is that it? So you're almost better off in year one to win 3 games, so that now we're not setting up this, as you say, a false floor, a false ceiling. Yeah. So he goes three years in a row, he goes 7-6. He was damned from the get-go because he actually was successful in year one. Yeah. You create that pressure by just being good at what you do.
Yeah, that's how you talk about the two in my kind of lifetime coaches, legendary football coaches at the college football level. Bobby Bowden and Lavelle Edwards, mm-hmm. Hall of Famers in every way, unanimous Hall of Famers, both forced out because their program could not live up to the level of success that they had established consistently. And so at that point, both forced out. And obviously with those guys, you've got to do it very kindly. You've got to find a way to do it artfully, right? And I think Florida State and BYU did. And of course, I was paying close attention to the BYU thing and the stadium's named after Coach Edwards. And there's no question they've honored his legacy and recognize him as an amazing coach, program builder. But you know, in the end, he was forced out earlier than he wanted to be.
Yeah, and I think that's you know, I was watching I think it was on Netflix, the Swamp Kings thing, the Florida Gators, which they didn't really go into much detail about some of the real stuff that maybe was going on too, with interesting stories about the players. But it's just the stress there, you know. Urban Meyer, they lose one game, and it's like,
yeah,
he's done. This guy's toast. It's a crazy world sometimes, depending on where you look too. So. You do create that own pressure, though, with the more success. You could be the greatest coach ever. 2 years where you struggle, it's over.
That's what makes football so amazing. If people really understood the amount of work, effort, thought, preparation that goes into just one game, and then over the course of a season, maybe 12 games, right? And even in the NFL, you're talking 20 games on the outside with preseason. That's not like basketball. That's not like baseball, where you can go through up and down streaks. To me, those sports seem 4 or 5 seasons long. You can go through a slump. You can kind of regain. Mm-hmm. You can add some players at the professional level. You can cut guys. You know, it's kind of like there's no time for that in the NFL. And the game is so tactical in the NFL. The idea that you would add 3 or 4 players mid-season that would somehow gel that quickly into your offense or defense at the NFL level, that's not a good way to be building a team mid-season, is adding, you know, kind of free agents. But baseball, sure. Basketball, that's different. You can kind of show up and make a contribution on day one and then kind of catch up in terms of the playbook as you go.
I think that's interesting too, because you're right. Trade deadline's a big deal in the NBA, NHL, and the MLB. It's a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And the NFL trade deadline's kind of like, and even if you get a stud, you go, he didn't really work out in that first year in the trade because he doesn't know the offense. He doesn't know the defense. He's just running around there. And that makes such a huge difference. And I love all these sports. But I do think that with basketball, I mean, the basketball and baseball, a game can change. You get one guy on base and he hits this other hitter just hits a home run. It's 2-0. You win the game. Maybe you're. I mean, all the spreads you see in baseball are -1.5. The best team in the league versus the worst team in the league, it will be a spread of -1.5 because they know. Basketball, you get hot, you get hot. If you get a guy that just suddenly hits 5 3 pointers in a game and maybe he's a terrible 3-point shooter, that could be the difference. Football, you don't really. Getting hot is different in football.
Hey, well, you just look at the playoffs. Like, it takes 7 games to determine, you know, to come to a group agreement on who the better team is to advance. In football, it's one game.
It's one game, and so, it could be your worst game of the season.
Yeah, so every 5 minutes, every 6-7 minutes of game time is equivalent to like one game in a 7-game series. I mean, your momentum is better swing back and forth really quickly in football if you want to try to steal a game.
What is – let me go back on that. What is getting hot in the NFL as it relates to, like, if you watch baseball, a pitcher, he's feeling it today. He's got control of that baseball. He's really hitting everything he wants. Basketball, obviously, just a certain guy can shoot it. Heat check. We hear that stuff. What is that like in football? Is a quarterback the only one that can really get hot?
Not in my opinion. In my opinion, it's inspired defense. And inspired defense only happens consistently when the offense is rolling. And that to me is when I see a hot team, I'm seeing a team that's playing inspired defense, because defense is like offensive line. There's not a lot of credit. I mean, you can get a sack, you can get an interception. There's some things where you put your highlight film together, but for the most part, you're just out there sacrificing your body for the win. And a lot of times, just on defense, it's the guy doing their job best that's actually not making the play, right? Because the ball finds its way to the weak spot. And yeah. So you've got a dominant guy up front or in the secondary. The ball's not coming their way. The ball's going to the weak spot on the defense, and somebody else is making the play. And so if you've got that inspired defense, you know, heating up, it's generally because somebody on offense or the whole offensive group is firing on all cylinders. I mean, they're inspiring the guys sitting over there on defense. The defensive coaches now have time to make adjustments in between series because the offensive drives are lasting longer. The defense is going out on the field with a lead to protect a lead, and it is much different. If you're going out on defense and you're constantly 6 to 8 points behind, you know, even single digits, the other team is not taking any chances.
Sure.
They're just pounding and pounding. They're happy to pound and punt if they need to. And so you've got to find a way to get stops. But at the same time, in the back of a defender's mind, you're thinking, if we get this stop, are we just going to go out on the field next time and be down by eight still? You know, but when that offense is rolling and the defense gets inspired, that's what I consider a heated up team.
Yeah, if you're making defensive stops like crazy and that offense can't produce and then you finally give one up and it's 7-0, that can feel like 21-0.
Exactly.
And that mental thing just starts to take over. I love to hear that too, because I've always thought about this when I'm watching games where it's like, oh, he's heating up. And I'm like, what is that in football? And just the way you say it too, it's perfect. It's more of a team thing. In basketball, yeah, you have to be disciplined. You have to know your switches and talk, go over screens, under screens. But let's face it, in basketball, you can say, Luka, take the ball. You're going one-on-one. It's ISO. That's not a play. That's just take over, get to the rim. Football is like all, I mean, yeah, you can say go deep and we're throwing it up, but that is still a design. Your offensive line still has to hit all of those blocks correctly. Your receiver has to get the whatever. If it is a route, if it is some kind of a fake or a double pump or whatever, you do it. Even in a play like that where you say, hey, Calvin Johnson, go be better than everybody else, there's still 400 other things that have to happen before you get that ball to him.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why people say it's the greatest team sport there is. It truly is.
I believe you.
It is, you know, such a physical sport. There is so much riding on every game. It's so easy for a poor offense to make a defense look poor. It's so easy for a poor defense to make an offense look poor. It is the ultimate team game. And, you know, in basketball or baseball, you don't even really talk about offense and defense, right? It's not like that. It's the same players out there for one thing, right? But you just outscore. And that's a simple mathematic equation, and it should be like that in football. It's just, well, score one more than the opponent and you win, right? But like, okay, well, you know, losing 54-52 is a lot different than losing 9-7.
Sure. I mean, and there's positives you can take from hey, our offense was really cooking, or, you know, defensively was amazing.
Right.
And this is, again, hockey I have a harder time with. I don't talk as much hockey. Obviously, we talk Avs. But I've always had a harder time because in between the goals, which can be a long time, you can go periods, you can go games, you know, it could be 1-0 at the end. The plays to go back and forth and what those look like, and I know if you're a diehard hockey person, you know what's going on deeply. But in football, you don't need it. You don't need a touchdown or 3 points to tell a story about that drive. There's so many things. You guys could get the ball in the 20, and then your blocking really is working well. You're running the ball well, but maybe you get to the opponent's 35 and it's a fumble or something. But you can tell a lot from that drive leading up, where you guys were hitting those blocks, the quarterback's making the right reads. There's so many things that happen without there actually being a score.
Absolutely. You know, a basketball coach, you'll hear him say a lot of times, you know, kind of in frustration, like after a loss or something, or maybe at halftime, well, we got to make buckets. We got to make baskets. In other words, the unstated term being like, hey, we're coaching, the players are working hard, they're getting open shots, you have to hit open shots. And, you know, football is significantly different than that. There is a physical battle going on. You have to be able to move the other people away from the spots that they want to be in to win. And, you know, blocking and tackling, it is physical. And generally, you can kind of either do that or not. And it shows up pretty early in the game whether you can move the opponent physically. And there's some adjustments that can be made, and there's some different angles and things like that. I don't want to say that it's like it's always decided in the first quarter, but it can show up pretty early whether physically you can handle the task of that day.
It's such a fascinating game. And I'm going to have Coach Smiley on tomorrow. We're going to talk about how much basketball is the greatest sport in the history of the world. I promise, not yet. Coach, we haven't even got into this. So what's going on? It's May 29th. We're flying through this year. I mean, when you and I started, it's cold outside. It's around the holidays, I think. We've already been through spring ball. We're getting everybody kind of back together again. We've got this 9-week designated summer conditioning period begins today. It is May 29th on a Wednesday when we're recording this.
That's right. Yeah. So I've been talking about the discretionary period, which runs most of May from basically the time we have our spring game. The guys go through finals and they get into May or their discretionary period where they can choose to stay in Greeley. They can choose to – I mean, our weight room's open every day, and we've got the facilities for them. The trainers are still working. The training room is still open. But most of the guys get out of town for at least a few weeks during that discretionary period. Well, they were all back yesterday, and at my house, I hosted 120 people at my house.
That's right. I wanted to ask you about that.
There's a big yard. We catered. Normally when we have the position groups over, my wife Sarah is working all day, and my daughters as well. Like they're putting on a spread, and Eddie Gonzalez is kind of the gopher. He's getting the ingredients. He's bringing the tables over the house, and that. So we had that going all winter long, but then this was all at once. 120 people. I mean, we don't have 120 rostered guys yet because the young guys haven't shown up. But when you add the staff and their families, those little kids are running around. And then we had the training staff as well, who's here all summer and working daily with the guys. It was just a completely different energy than it is a year ago. The players were happy to see each other. There's a lot of positive momentum and belief. And the guys are excited about getting to work in these next 9 weeks. This is an NCAA-designated 9-week summer conditioning period. We actually only have 8 weeks of the summer program because the week of the 4th of July is an off week. We take that back to a discretionary period, and then we have Juneteenth is another. Any university holiday is also a mandated athletics holiday.
So how many days a week are we talking? So, eight weeks essentially. 5 days a week? Or I know you told me before, but you'll have to tell me again.
We're going five. Okay. It's an 8-hour per week NCAA limit. And so we do have to give the guys 2 days off a week. Some teams are going three or four times a week during this period. We try to get in and get work done quickly on some of these days so that we can touch base with the guys on all 5 days. I feel like at UNC, there's been a long time kind of party culture. And obviously, Friday night is a big night for that. So we do train on Saturday morning. So I want to give the guys one more motivational piece to keep them off the streets on Friday and prepare for something rigorous on Saturday morning.
On the summer conditioning period. I mean, is that exactly what it sounds like? You're going to spend most of the time conditioning. And is that what typically happens at this time? Or are there other coaches that have a philosophy of we're working on installs and stuff? Or you tell me, like, what do you have to do in this period?
I'll give you the daily schedule. The daily kind of the way this is bricked out foundationally, the offense shows up and they start lifting at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
And then they go from their lift on all the days that we train, they go from their lift to out on the field. And on Mondays and Fridays, they're doing speed and agility work with our strength and conditioning staff. But on Tuesdays and Thursdays after their lift, we're in what we call practice. And it's not there's no protective equipment, so it doesn't look a lot like football. But we can use footballs, and we can put the boys in formations. We don't do as much of that. It's more positional work, but we can get them into small-sided formations. The offense and defense is not out there together, so it's not competitive in that way. But even doing formation review and play review on air, there's a lot of value to that, and it does take some effort as well. And so then the defense shows up, and they're out on the field first. And then the defensive guys will finish with a lift. And then Saturday morning's kind of its own animal. So that's kind of 4 days a week. That's how we do it, with a lift and a run, and or the run is there's a run or practice is the best way to say it. But then Saturdays are these misogis, these opportunities to get in there, and they're designed to be 3 minutes or less, 3 minutes and 16 seconds or less. So it's a much faster workout, but it is, it's all you can eat.
You mentioned, speaking of all you can eat, you mentioned last, with the guys coming back into town last night, getting together, eating. Were there any, you said you can just feel it. There's a different vibe. Everybody's good. Was there an obvious sense that, hey, these guys were all out working pretty good on their own? We talked about that dome thing where you wish you could just have these guys, locked in a dome for a while so you don't have to worry about them getting out and about. But was the obvious vibe that everybody took this off-season portion pretty seriously?
Yeah, I mean, there's 93 guys, right now that are so there's always outliers. There were some guys that ran into car trouble or airport trouble, I had two guys that showed up. We started the party at 2:30, and I had the horseshoes set up, real horseshoes, by the way. This is like homemade, a real horseshoe game, not a big a Clydesdale replica horseshoe, but an actual event horsing shoe. But we had the cornhole. The guys, I don't even think they knew what horseshoes was, so that wasn't real popular. It was a lot of work for nothing on my part to pound those stakes.
Nobody took to them. I love horseshoes.
I kept saying, hey, you guys are waiting for cornhole and spike ball. There's horseshoes over here. Anybody want to play? And they were like, looking over there like, what about it? What about the horseshoes?
That's the best.
Yeah, I don't think they knew what it was. But they know spike ball. We had two spike ball games set up. We had the cornhole game, and those were real popular. Guys were out there sweating and giving it their all, forming little tournaments and stuff.
Oh, I love that.
And that was a lot of fun. But then, so that went from 2:30 to maybe 5:30. The guys have things to do. They're all moving in and getting settled. We didn't intend it to be an all-night thing. Well, then we had some other guys show up at 6:30, oh, coach, I just got here from the airport, came straight from the airport, and hey, man, the food's still out. It's good. This was not going to be a hard start, we're taking roll thing. This is me trying to reach out to you guys and say, hey, I care about you as people. Come over to the house. You're always welcome here. We're going to provide a meal. Ben Fusco, who runs Zoe's, he catered it for us. And put on a great spread, brisket, pulled pork sandwich option, slaw, potato salad, beans, apple crisp, brownies.
Is a good spread.
It was fantastic, and the guys really enjoyed it. Several guys were going back, for more and more and more and more, and then took some home with them. So it was really good.
I love that, and I love the horseshoe story. I could just almost see you acting like it's not you singing. Hey guys, I see that it's open over there. Whoa! It's finally.
They're just trying to use the power of suggestion, and then man, this sucks. Going through all this work, and because actually, I was using real horseshoes, and I prefer barefoot. I would have to bring in a farrier. I don't actually know how to shoe a horse. I know how to barefoot trim, and so that's how I take care of my own horses. And we've got some good sandy, gravelly areas that do a good job of keeping the horses' hooves in good condition. But I've got these horseshoes, and some of them are just because the place I'm at was a commercial horse farm for a long time. And so I will find on occasion shoes out in the pasture. So I've got these shoes, and then I had to go get some. What's the Rust-Oleum enamel, right? I had to paint them different colors. I put all this preparation and thought in, and I'm a guy who really builds stuff up in my mind, right?
Oh, this is going to be an epic tournament.
Yeah, epic tournament with real horseshoes. Because the ones that you would buy, a horseshoe game at the store.
Yeah, they're kind of plasticky.
I think they probably are real horseshoes, but maybe for draft horses, working on cobblestones. I mean, these shoes are enormous, and they're just differently shaped than the ones I'm used to and all that. So I wanted to show them hey, this is kind of a homemade horseshoe game. And I thought it would be something that they really appreciated. We'd have deep discussions about how does the shoe go on. I was going to, show them everything I know. Because it was a hot day yesterday and I had set it up out in the sun, I leaned the horseshoes against the stake in a certain way, to kind of shade them and make sure that they didn't really heat up in the sun laying flat. And they never moved. The four horseshoes were still in the exact same spot that I had leaned them up against the stake.
Oh, I love that. Well, that brings me to something, because I know we're going to wrap up with just kind of a brief glance at the schedule next fall. But we were talking, and I let you know last week, because I've been sweating this for a while. One of my cousins asked me to speak at her graduation in Eastern Colorado. And I do radio every single day. I'm never nervous. I'm never shy. It never happens. I can do remote broadcasts. It doesn't matter. Public speaking, that's a different, completely different beast. So I was pretty nervous about it. And I was joking with you, of course, before we started. And I was like, tough part is you're looking around at the kids and you're hoping, you're begging for them to give you something back, or they're paying attention. So the horseshoe thing kind of is interesting. But also what I wanted to pick your brain on, how do you do that on a daily basis or on a weekly basis or whatever? Because I know you communicate with these guys constantly, and I know we discussed this months ago, but they're not always giving you those facial expressions that let you know, I'm hearing what you're saying, coach. In fact, some of them might just have a blank stare, and that's not demeaning. It's just, this is college kids. I was speaking to high school kids. That's just kind of that stage of life. How difficult is that? To talk a lot, to build something up in your head, perhaps, to build up a, hey, I'm going to give out this philosophy and talk, and I have this awesome speech. And then you look out there and you're just like, I don't know if that registered with many people.
You're bringing up a really interesting kind of organizational behavior aspect that I've thought about for a long time. I'm sure there are smarter people out there who could describe it better. And maybe even some studies out there. There's probably a number, and as a position coach, the number of participants in your room is typically low enough that there's feedback, and so that we all start as position coaches in this business. And you're working with this position group, and you're lecturing the guys, teaching the guys. You have a small classroom. Depending on your position group size, it can be anywhere from, you know, 6 guys to 16 guys. Probably for the offensive line, they're almost pushing 20 sometimes. So. But as this position coach, there's feedback. It's response oriented. You're generally, when you say something, you get some type of response back. And then as a coordinator, it completely changes. Now you're standing in front of 35, 50 guys at a time. And the feedback, I just think that obligation for the listener to actually give you the head nods, the things that you would always get in a one-on-one conversation, even the questions, the follow-up questions. Hey, what do you mean by that? That obligation or that feeling of comfort by the listener to stop you in mid-speech and say, what do you mean? Or to kind of interrupt or
raise a hand.
Yeah, raise a hand. Sure. That kind of goes away. And then when you're talking to 120 guys as a head coach, it's again even a further realization, because now, you know, this is a huge group, and nobody wants to be the one out of 120 that's asking a question. And I don't even know if they feel seen and heard. So it's something that you really got to get used to. And I am at this point in my career. I expect no feedback from these guys, right? I've got certain guys on every team that I know, if I needed to know whether my words are hitting right, I know to take a glance at them, because they're just that way. They bring the energy. They bring the feedback. It's like you're having a one-on-one conversation. But that's such a small percentage of a team when you have 120 people sitting in a room. So it is really difficult. I commend you for getting out there and just powering through the speech. You get no feedback.
No.
My wife says all the time, you know, because I'll kind of run things by her. I really got to get this point across to the team, you know, the night before or something like that. So I'm you know, here's what I'm thinking. And then she'll say when I get home, and she hasn't learned in all these years, she still asks the same question. How did it go? What did the guys think? Like, oh, there's no feedback. There's no feedback. Like, they don't tell you how your speech or how your motivation came across. They're giving you, for the most part, blank stares.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I went to a graduation the following week, and this woman was great. She wasn't bashful at all. She had well thought out speech, but it took 467 hours. So everybody there is kind of like, oh, okay, here. So I feel like mine was supposed to be 10 minutes. And of course, you fast forward that because you're nervous. And I think I did about 7 minutes and 45 seconds. I timed it. So I was bummed about that. But then the people I talked to after, they're like, those are the best kind of speeches, man. Great job. You got us out of there, because it wasn't that long of a graduation. But in this case, you just have to hope that you keep throwing it up there. You keep throwing stuff up against the wall. And then, like you said, you might hear back 10 plus years later where it's like, coach, there was one time in, you know, in one of our auditorium meetings, you said something that just stuck with me and I was thinking about it. And I don't want to give you a nod or anything, but I was thinking about it. And I use that for my life, whatever it is, whether it's football or something else. You just kind of hope that you get that. And I already know that that's true. You get that from a lot of former players and guys that you coached with that come back and say, man, that really resonated with me.
I had a player come by the house yesterday.
There you
go. A couple hours before the barbecue, the welcome back barbecue. And he's a good player, but not a starter. And he's going to be a senior. And so I don't want to say his name, but because he quit football. He decided it was no longer for him. He decided that the passion wasn't there, or what he was getting out of it wasn't the same as he's putting into it. And on the one hand, a big surprise, because he's a guy that's put a lot of effort in, a lot of energy, a lot of buy-in. And I do get feedback from him, you know, about how much he's enjoying the program and stuff like that. And so, and because he's very articulate that way, he was also able to articulate the reasons that I think are valid that he didn't want to continue to put in that kind of work, you know, to play the role that he was playing, and he had other interests in life and he's ready to move on. But then, you know, as I just asked him some questions like I always would, just to make sure he's thinking this whole thing through. Hey, have you talked to your high school coach? Have you talked to your family? Have you considered this? You know, I want to make sure guys aren't just blindly chasing passion all their life, because eventually it comes down to like taking pride in anything that you're doing, in my opinion, when you're chasing happiness in life. There's not happiness in a different job. There's not happiness in a different career. There's ups, downs, setbacks, breakthroughs in everything. And I just wanted to make sure that he had thought it out. And he certainly had. So I feel like he's making the right decision. But then he said, I didn't ask him about it. He just said, coach, I believe in what you're doing. I've never had this much fun in football. It's not going to be for me this year. But the things you're talking about, you're on the right track. This has been a party culture, and it was really surprising to me because he was kind of throwing his teammates under the bus, because there's a lot of guys who want to kind of say, hey, you know, it's not – we haven't been losing at UNC for decades because of the players and our habits. We've been losing because of bad coaches, right? Because from the outside looking in, that's what it is. You just fire – at UNC, they just keep firing the coach, right? Yeah, coach can't win, damn it. And so they keep firing the coach. Well, you know, certainly the coach the team is a reflection of the coach. But this is more than just X's and O's and getting UNC on the right path. I have to somehow get these guys to believe that if they're willing to make enough sacrifices and pour enough into football, that we can be successful here. And that's not an easy task. And so to get that, you mentioned it, that little bit of feedback from him of, hey, coach, yes, I know not everybody's excited about you coming down hard, cracking down hard on the drinking, the smoking, the poker nights, but there are still guys that are sabotaging their own success because they're still doing it. Keep going with that. Wow. I was super, super proud to hear that.
I was thinking about you yesterday, actually, and we don't have to get into it, but you know, the video that surfaced about the team down in Boulder from about a year ago, they're showing players shooting craps. Is that what it is? And there's actually money being exchanged back and forth. And I talked about this, and I know one of the coach's sons is having, you know, some issues from way back when he was in high school, and now he's filing for bankruptcy and all that stuff. And we don't have to get into detail. I don't think it was the end of the world, but on my show yesterday I said, this is what happens when you have a coach that says, we don't really believe in culture. Like, that's not a thing. He did say that. He's like, well, it's not really, we're not thinking about that. And I brought you up on the show yesterday, and I said, Ed Lamb believes in culture. And so if you see something like that, which I don't care who you are, it's not a great look. You see it on the side. It was on school campus when this was happening at this school in Boulder. And you just kind of see it. How does that reflect? How do the donors look at that? How do the fans look at that? Some people might not care, but the fact that there are some is a big deal. And I thought, this is what happens when you're not trying to establish that culture. And that's what we talk about when we're saying, what does culture actually mean? It's saying, hey, maybe we don't do this right here and right now. Maybe this is something we put off and do later, maybe next year, 2 years, when we graduate, we can do all that stuff. Or we don't videotape it and put it out on video. I don't know, but I'm just thinking of the culture thing. It is a real thing. And I've learned that a lot from you, of what that takes to really establish that culture.
I believe in it. And maybe it's just been in my two head coaching opportunities with Southern Utah and UNC. These are not the places where we're going to just gather up the most talent. You know, talent tends to be attracted to winning tradition. It tends to be attracted to money, to resources, to the size of the stadium, you know, the environment on game days. We're not measuring up in any of those ways. So does that mean we can't be successful? Heck no. But we've got to develop the best team. We got to develop the best players. And I just don't know how you can be out there sabotaging yourself with lack of sleep. And so any habit and still develop. So any habit that's going to lead to lack of sleep, and you know, the card culture, the dice culture, the drinking culture, the dance club culture, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with any of those things.
Sure.
Right? But the culture that surrounds those things leads to less sleep, poor recovery, and that's not the way to develop.
Well, and especially, I guarantee you, you know, we had texters popping in yesterday. If a video surfaced of UNC football players, for example, and they're just in their campus and they're doing all that stuff and there's money, some might go, eh, not a big deal. Some might say, wow, they're really taking football seriously over there, even though they eat, breathe, and sleep football, but maybe in that 5-minute video, they were doing that. So it is a perception thing too, and you have to be mindful of that.
Absolutely. It is perception. What is, and perception is reality in a public business like college football. So it could be in it. You can shoot dice for an hour and have, you know, not have your whole stipend check on the line or your ability to eat on the line and probably be a pretty innocent thing, right? But okay, those of us that have been around it, and I've shot dice. I've done the poker. I've been at the clubs at times in my life. And I just know that that's not generally how it works. You generally don't play poker for an hour with a small amount of money for any sustained length of time of your life, right? Eventually, the pot's going to get bigger. The nights are going to get later. You're blowing off steam, and then the alcohol comes out. I mean, that's the culture of dice, poker, clubbing, whatever you want to call it.
In even innocent game, things like sitting at home playing video games, and maybe there's no alcohol, there's nothing involved, it's literally just you by yourself. Well, you stay up till midnight, you keep playing, whether it's sports games or whatever, you want to beat that level, and then now you're running off of only a couple hours of sleep. And it's not like you were doing anything that could be perceived as wrong. If a video surfaced of some dude sitting there playing video games, people aren't going to go, what's going on with UNC? These guys are crazy.
Yeah.
They'll just go, oh, they have nerds on the team.
Yeah.
But you're not sleeping and you're not getting your mind right. Those things come into play too.
They absolutely do. The studies on sleep are just irrefutable. And the evidence is out there. The sports sleep evidence, the sports science of what we call right sleep is out there. And I provide that to the guys. I'll be doing my presentations to the guys and just put up a QR code for them to just pull out their phone, scan it right there. Hey, you don't have to trust. You don't have to take my word for it. Here's the studies. You guys have information at your fingertips. If you still want to sabotage yourself, hopefully we got other guys in this room that'll kick you down the depth chart.
Yeah. Coach, as we kind of wrap up here, this has been you had two bullet points for me. And look at that. We're at 53 minutes already. And this is when you know these conversations just keep flowing. We wanted to get into gold letter games this fall, and I can guess what that kind of means,
sure,
but let's talk about it, looking at the schedule.
First introduced to me, just in my football experience, nobody had ever talked about red letter games, but that was a Jim Harbaugh thing, and Jim's into the history of football, right? And Bo Schembechler was his coach, and his dad, Jack, was an incredible coach, a lot of different places, including an FCS national championship head coach at Western Kentucky. And Jack was on the staff with us at San Diego, but Jim used to talk to the team about red letter games in the off season. And these are the games that are going to really most likely focus our season in one direction or the other. And a red letter game can be you have to look at, and I learned this from Jim. You have to look at your schedule overall. You have to look at where your team is, and you have to look at the opportunities within the schedule. The bye week would mean something. The quality, the caliber of opponents, even though you can't exactly predict the caliber of your opponent in the preseason, it generally follows a pattern. The good teams, you know, generally don't drop off a cliff, and the bad teams generally don't rise. And so, just what you're looking for is how to shape up the season. Now, if your first game's not a red letter game, it doesn't mean you're not throwing everything you've got into red letter games. So our two, you know, red letter games, and here I'm going to call them gold letter games because I just, you know, at SUU we were red. Here we're blue and gold.
I like it, yeah.
And so I like this idea of gold letter games. And we've been talking about it our whole offseason. It's our first home game against Abilene Christian. That's a team we lost to a year ago. It was a game that was fairly competitive on the scoreboard. Our guys played really hard. We did some good things. But the game wasn't close, ever particularly close. They kind of jumped out to a 10-ish point lead and pretty much held on to that the whole time and then built an extra score on it. But we were at their place. It was the opening game for us. We didn't know a lot about who we were. And, we feel like that we, in order to have a successful season, we've got to be able to win at home consistently. And so that first home game to me is really important. Now, like I said, we're going to throw everything into our first game, Incarnate Word. Then we go to Colorado State. We're not going to be talking about Abilene Christian during those weeks. But
I'm going to write that down so I don't bring it up to you.
We can have a very good football team that would potentially not win on the road at Incarnate mm-hmm. Word, a team that's been one of the best teams in the country, top 10 team in the country three
sure.
years in a row.
Yeah.
And obviously going and playing up a level at Colorado State. We could have a very good playoff caliber team, Big Sky Championship caliber team, that doesn't win one of the first two games, right? We're going to do everything we can to win. I want to be clear. But I don't want to – if we're sitting at 0-2 with a Big Sky Championship team, I don't want a team down in the dumps. Now, when we come back home, if we can't protect against a good – if we can't protect our home turf against a good Abilene Christian team, we are not on track for a conference championship, in my opinion.
Mm.
So that's the one that's more of the litmus test. While the first two may not be a litmus test, they're an opportunity. They're not a litmus test to the quality of our play. I believe that first home game against Abilene Christian is. And then the second one is the home opener – is also our conference opener. The conference slate begins with Cal Poly at home. Again, a team – that we played last year and lost to, but a game that we probably should have won. We had control of that game when we muffed a punt deep mm-hmm. in our own territory. I mean, we took an early lead. We pinned them deep. We got a huge sack. Sam Yongi Amituinai had a huge sack, pinned them deep in their own territory. They punt to us, and their punter was incredible. He gets off a 70-yard punt. It was not an easy punt to field. But we muff it, and they get the ball deep in our own territory. And, such a momentum flip, and we weren't able to overcome that. Lost a close game at Cal Poly. Okay, now both these teams, we've got them at our place. We're a year away from, a year removed from having lost to them. I think these are two big litmus tests to show, number one, we can win at home. We do win at home. Number two, starting conference with a 1-0 record. This is a team, remember, UNC, since joining the Big Sky, has never had a winning record in the Big Sky. So let's start out 1-0 and see what we can build on from there. And then, so that I have kind of a rotating slide that before I ever start speaking to the team pops up. It says at the bottom of that, G-O-A-L-S, goals. And what I explain that is, and then there's some finer writing so the guys always understand it. I say to the guys, if these two games aren't enough for you, if you want me to be talking about national championships and conference championships, and you say, Coach, there's only two gold letter games. Why not Colorado State? Why not Incarnate Word? Okay, goals. Great ones, adjust, and lead. An acronym. Great ones, adjust, and lead systems. So if you as a leader are really out there at the point where you're putting in the kind of work where you can lead us and motivate us to greater goals than the two gold letter games here that I've talked about being such a litmus test for the season, hey, do it. Lead us. Adjust these goals. Lead us. But remember, it's got to be about systems. And so I think in that gold letter philosophy right there, we have a chance to establish something. Establish a track record, put ourselves on the right track for the season, set up some momentum, but also there's room to grow within that because I want to be clear. I want to win a lot more than two games, but those two games are so critical to me in terms of how our team's shaping up.
I absolutely love this discussion because that depth charts and then schedules,
yeah.
like those are the things, Coach. And then you just look at key games all the time and say, man, that could set the tone. That's the one. Not to say you don't start season 2-0 and pull off something crazy against CSU, but I love that because you want to set that tone at home against a team that you that beat you last year. And I love that. September 14th, of course, that's a Saturday. Circle that one. Let's jam that thing, man. Let's get people rolling and pack that place and just make it one heck of an environment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Another way to say it to our guys, and they'll understand this. If we drop a couple of close games early on the road at a good Incarnate Word team and at a good CSU team, there's not wholesale changes coming in the way we're coaching and the way that we're and who's in the lineup and all that stuff. We're always evaluating all of that. We want to be as good as we can be. But if we can't protect at home against a good Abilene Christian team, we're not on the right track. There's some significant changes that need to happen. And the team needs to understand that. Season's not over if we lose to Abilene Christian at home in that home opener. The season's not over. But we got to rebuild quick in a week and find a way to get back out there.
Hearing you say that, hey, putting a lot of pressure on that game, but at the same time, does it mean it's season's over? No, but serious discussions have to be had if we can't pull that one off. And so I think that's refreshing. Let's put some emphasis on that football game. That's a big game at home. If we can't get it done, we got to have some deep discussions with everybody.
Absolutely. And the thing I like about both those teams, obviously we lost to them last year, but Cal Poly had a lot of talented players, a lot of speed, and Abilene Christian was very physical. And so those two games give us a good idea of, okay, can we match up to the speed of Cal Poly and get a victory at home? Can we match up to the physicality of Abilene Christian and get a victory at home? And those are questions, right? Like I got full respect for those two teams. I mean, how could we not? We lost to them a year ago. And so it would be such a breakthrough for our guys, when those games happen. The whole season's not riding on the games, but they're such indicators. They are mile markers. They are signposts that we have to pay attention to.
Well, again, I keep saying it. With every episode, I just get a little bit more excited. And when you start talking about schedules and we start circling games, yeah, I'm pretty pumped for next season, Coach. It was great. Another great episode. Episode 17. Are we doing anything special for episode 20? Should we be thinking about that? Is that anything significant because we made it 20 episodes?
Yeah, I want to answer that. I feel like we've brought special to every episode. If
that's
there's something
true.
Out
every
there that I knew to
pretty
do,
special.
I would have done it a long time ago. So it's just like coaching football. If I'm aware of it, I'm already doing it. Anything I'm not doing is because I'm not aware if we should have been doing it.
With radio, it's like when I say make it special, it's like add a little tone or some music to it or something like that. It's pretty easy.
Sound effect. Could I have a sound effect button?
If I knew how to do that, I would. It is possible. Yeah. It is. But you see me in here. Pressing the record button is about my level. That's about as high up as I can get. So we'll try it, though. We'll get it. We got to see if we can get the UNC Bears song in here or something. That's what we need.
You're the expert on that. My fear would be, we don't want to become the Howard Stern show in here. So I feel like right now we're pretty straight up.
You say something, we have just like, oh, yeah. We'll do something. Coach, it's always a pleasure. I absolutely love these shows. They're so much fun. And all those that are listening for the feedback that we're getting, it kind of feeds the fire. I mean, it just adds a little bit more. So I really love it. We get some insightful stuff, or at least I do, that I'm seeing. And I know a lot of the parents are reaching out too. So keep that going because this is something unique. And I don't know that a lot of people are doing this. And again, Coach, I thank you for showing up every single day and being ready to just talk about whatever. You give me bullet points, but I throw a lot of weird stuff at you, and you handle it so well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We'll let the listeners be the judge of that, but thanks for your confidence.
Episode 18 coming up next week. We'll officially be into the June month, so it's heating up in more ways than one. Coach, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Brady.